So before starting, just a reminder to the audience, to the public, you can already from the first speech send written question to the chat. And so at the end of the three speeches, I will read your questions to our guest. So this will be the final part of the panel and very important as an open discussion. So we will start today with Bernard Muller. Thank you, Bernard, to be here. Bernard Muller is a senior professor in spatial development at TU Dresden and the former director of the Leibniz Institute of Ecological, Urban and Regional Development. He's an academician at the German Academy of Science and Engineering, and is the coordinator, as I mentioned before, of the Horizon 2020 project, Transition Toward Urban Sustainability Through Socially Integrative City in Europe and China. So I guess your meaning of sustainability will start from the notion of social integration. So the floor is yours. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the nice introduction, and thanks for the pictures. I hope that the quality will be all right. We can start with the first slide. Thank you very much. We often complain that the term sustainability is not well defined and that it's often interpreted and applied in very different ways. Nevertheless, there is a long experience with sustainability, and an agreed definition also exists. It's the Brundtland Commission in 1987, which means 33 years ago, which came up with a still valuable and valid definition. Sustainable development is defined as the development that meets the needs and aspirations of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. This is what it says. We have to acknowledge that this is a normative setting, and in a way, we can consider it an agreement of the, at that time, of the global society. We can go on to the next slide, please. Nevertheless, it took 28 years and three major international events, the so-called Earth summits. The next slide, please. I don't have it yet here. Could we switch? So it took 28 years until the United Nations endorsed the so-called Sustainable Development Goals in 2015. There are 17 goals which are specified by all in all 169 targets. Each of them is further narrowed down by internationally agreed indicators in order to measure success. One of the 17 goals, fortunately enough, is to create sustainable cities and communities. Most of the other goals also have an impact on sustainable urban development. For instance, the extinction or reduction of poverty, good health and well-being, quality education for all, and so on. We switch to the next slide, please. We in the Transurban EU-China project believe that the creation of socially integrative cities will contribute to achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. We have defined the socially integrative city in a rather comprehensive way. There are socially mixed, cohesive, livable, and vibrant communities. This is what we mean by socially integrative. Then compactness, a functional mix, intra-urban connectivity plays an important role. The environmental quality, the quality of life, and the public spaces, they contribute to the well-being of the population. There is a sense of community, a sense of place, and the preservation of cultural heritage shape the city's in and outward bound image. Investments into neighborhood improvement, infrastructure, and housing are important supportive measures. And empowerment and participation of the population as well play a very important role together with what we call the glue within a society, the social capital. All in all, this means that we have to think in five different dimensions which are interlinked, which characterize the socially integrative city. Promoting socio-cultural development and social capital within urban societies, fostering the local economy and the local labor market, improving the urban environment and living conditions, conducting urban planning and design in a collaborative way, and creating a supportive institutional setting and secure urban finance. Of course, this is easy to say, but difficult to do. Therefore, we have aimed to bring academia and practice from Europe and China together in order to exchange and analyze experience and to propose further action. I just want to limit my intervention here to two examples which are of relevance for urban sustainability in Europe and China, according to our opinion. Coordination and cooperation between the different stakeholders on the one hand, and participation and the activation of the local population on the other hand. Let us start with the first one, and we can switch to the next slide, please. I want to show you a few pictures in order to demonstrate what I mean with this. In Europe, coordination and cooperation is often achieved through the elaboration of long and medium-term visions and perspectives, and by deriving concrete actions and measures on the local level. Integrated urban development planning is usually a difficult and time-consuming exercise. Many stakeholders from the public sector, across all levels of government, across all relevant sectors, then from the business world and the civil society, have to be brought together and convinced and motivated to cooperate. The results of this difficult process is often not too much more than an informal, non-binding document like the ones which you see on the left side of this slide. Nevertheless, coordination pays off as one can create lively, fully equipped urban settlements and neighborhoods this way. In the middle of the slide, you see the diversity of the urban setting from examples in Europe where this approach was applied, in this case, mainly Germany. All comes together: integrated public transport, schools, health services, shopping facilities, cultural and community facilities, as well as housing areas serving the different needs and income levels of the population and the different age groups as well. As well, space for nature and recreation is there, public spaces and area for business. And at the bottom of the slide, you see two pictures of a gear wheel production company in one city. It has automated its production within the Industry 4.0 concept and built an environmentally friendly building certified by the green by the German Green Building Council, DGNB, as platinum, which means it's the highest possible recognition. It is located within, and you see it in the background of this picture, within an eco-settlement. And there's even a playground for children next door to this, usually and in the past, very polluting type of industry. This is what we mean by the city of short distances as well. You can easily walk from the neighboring settlement to the company, and you find all facilities you need close. Nevertheless, all this is by far not mainstream in Europe, and even less, I think, in China. You find some Chinese examples on the right side. The tabula rasa approaches in Chinese cities are still en vogue, creating new urban neighborhoods, especially in the more expensive central urban areas. Compensating and relocating the former population and building new for newcomers and new business to come. It is an approach which is usually very much developer-driven. Nevertheless, the actual trend in Chinese urban development goes into a different direction. The recently published proposals for formulating the 14th five-year plan from 2021 to 2025 fortunately talks about promoting a people-centered new urbanization approach. We hope this will go into this direction. With the next slide, we come to the second example, participation and activation. Like in the case of integrated urban development planning, participatory approaches are complex and time-consuming. And you can see from the slide on the left side that there are different ways to involve people. Local meetings, like in the Chinese case at the bottom, for instance, there are field visits with people discussing future changes at site at the top, and to bring the planning office, or part of it actually, physically to a rehabilitation site, like in the case of the container, which was erected temporarily in a renewal area in order to attract people to discuss their ideas. And in the middle of the slide, you can see examples from different European cities, again, in this case, the United Kingdom and the Netherlands, of what can be achieved by involving local people in the design of new urban areas. People were brought into the planning process from the beginning. First design proposals were modified over the time. The agreed principles as well, they were made the basis for contracts. And these contracts were not made with one developer, but with a number, with many developers who could only construct limited areas of the whole project, which this brings diversity. It creates identity, a sense of belonging, and a feeling of ownership among the population. On the right side of the slide, you see pictures from design competition in Wenjiang, a district of Chengdu, and examples of urban renewal in Wuhan. The developer-driven, small-scale approach of urban renewal often leads to interesting examples. We can see that. However, more important is the activation and engagement of the local residents, of shop owners, to improve their neighborhood by themselves, instead of waiting for, often, compensation and relocation. Finally, China has two assets which eventually could be more intensively made use of in participatory urban expansion and urban renewal in the future. Street and residence committees on the one hand, and the amazing urban planning exhibition centers on the other hand. However, the committees are still not much involved in planning. And of course, one has to take the local decision-making and power structure into consideration when proceeding in this direction. And planning exhibition centers could turn into places of debate and discussion. They could become places not only for demonstrating the latest development regarding sustainability, but they could become places for activating and motivating people to become themselves emancipated partners of pursuing urban sustainability through concrete local actions in a socially integrative city. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Bernard Muller. Moving to our next guest, Zhang Li, I know is also very interested into this notion of sustainability as social integration, as you proposed. I remember one nice issue of the magazine World Architecture that Zhang Li is the director of, dedicated to the city of Torino and based on the dichotomy between hard sustainability, where technology and numbers are the protagonists, and soft sustainability, where social issues are the most important topics. But behind being the director of World Architecture, Zhang Li is also the dean of the School of Architecture of Tsinghua University, the founding partner of Atelier T-Minus in Beijing, and during his academic career, he was visiting professor at the National University of Singapore, Harvard University, and also Politecnico di Torino. About the next projects by Zhang Li, he will be curator of the Chinese Pavilion at the Biennale di Venezia in 2021, and is the chief architect of the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympic sites of Chongli in the mountain area and Shugang in the city of Beijing. His speech will be dedicated to the topic of urban ergonomics and the establishment of better body and spaces relation in urban space can ensure more quality in urban life at the end, a more sustainable city. So Zhang Li, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Professor Michele Bonino, for this wonderful introduction. The point I'm going to present today, or I'm going to argue for today, is that actually when you connect the human body better to the urban space, then the city and the urban life is going to be more sustainable. So, and as Professor Bernard Muller has just said, China is aiming at a new way of doing urbanization, which is more human-centered, which will be targeting at better quality spaces. So changing basically from these kind of creating of monuments to the active involvement and engagement of the community and also the daily life, in particular, the movement, the active movement, the more sporty movement of the human body in the urban spaces. So we do see people of all ages in China actually having a new idea, a refreshed interest in the relationship between the human body and the space. So that's what we are currently, the idea that we are currently promoting is urban ergonomics, is how to think urban design and conceive urban design and architecture design through the knowledge and through the study of the human body. So it can be at very micro scale, which is very close to the human body. It can also from a very urban scale. So we really do believe that urban ergonomics can take us to the better design of better quality spaces in cities through these five scales, including an urban setup, which is the macro scale, the collective scale, which involves the design of public spaces and community spaces, the intermediate scale, as minor scale, and smaller spaces that are going to be shared by a group of people knowing very well of each other, and then family scale, which is intimate, and personal scale, which is haptic. I'm going to present several projects we've done or we currently are doing in the recent years. On the macro scale, it's actually the movement of the design of routes and networks of slow movement inside the city, which definitely would make the city more walkable and therefore more livable. And what you see here is a project for Beijing 2022 is the Big Air Venue. It features these loops surrounding this industrial site. Of course, this is one of the first buildings and first Olympic buildings that is going to be directly located inside a former factory, a former industrial village. So this is where it is in Beijing. The design actually was conceived through four loops. The first loop is actually people passing through this industrial site, through this bridge, and looking down at this industrial site. And the second scale is what is going to happen around the cooling towers and also the cooling lake, including the location, the select of the siting and location of the jumping hill itself, and also the redesigning of the waterfront along the former cooling pond. And this is what you get. And people do have the possibility of having different activities along the perimeter of the cooling lake, including coming down into the water. And right across the water, we do leave a open space. And for people, when there is a event, match event going on, so people can actually see it from far away. And also the creating of the spectator stand, it is actually inserted beneath the water level. So just to make sure that the entire venue wouldn't be too high to break the skyline of the cooling towers. And also the reuse of industrial structures. And here I have to thank Professor Bonino, because it is him who has led a Polito team doing the building in the right of the image, which is redesigning of the former oxygen factory, of course. And Torino is very good at doing this. You have Parco Dora, and probably Shougang is going to be the Parco Dora of Beijing. So reuse of the industrial structures to serve for the competition needs, including the serve for the spectators' flows. And another kind of people we have in mind is, of course, the athletes when they jump down, when they accelerate from the top of the hill, of the slope, what do they see? So the location and the sighting of the slope itself, again, is actually having this in mind. And this is what happens during the match. And another is the design of the ski jump in Chengli. It does a little bit more than a traditional ski jump, and because there are only less than 100 ski jumpers in China, so try to reuse this venue, we have to create something that is different. So we have a peak club on the top to have more cities. Also borrowing from the idea given by a Swiss design team back in 2016, they suggested that you should create a ring-shaped big building surrounding the entire mountain. And we couldn't do that, but we can do this footbridge linking all the venues and creating a walkable, very walkable spaces and spaces for mountain biking during the summer. And on top, of course, you have this peak club having a panorama view of the mountains around and a unique viewpoint that probably you wouldn't have without this kind of spaces, is right from the back of the ski jumpers. And also the design of the ski jump, we did rotate with the help of FIS competition managers. We do rotate the ski jump a little bit from the black line to the blue line, just to make ski jumpers are flying in the air, that what they see is not the small hill, but this valley into the depth, into the distance. On the community scale, and people do have the ability of free movement, so the best is to involve people, engage people in continuous movement. And this is what we did in this youth camp project. It's designed for these after-school programs for children, and we deliberately created this continuous twisting slope to make children run. From the bottom to the top, and then back to the ground. And in different corners, different kind of games can be developed by the owner of this youth camp. So we do see children running up and down, and multiple games developed at different corners, above and beneath the slope. And interestingly, when there is no after-school program for children, adults take over. And we had several community meetings there, including the making of such a large graffiti, collective graffiti, utilizing the big slope. And dancing firms doing special programs here, special shows here. For intermediate, scale, where you do see the body language of people around you, and there is also the possibility of creating a more interactivity between people in the urban space. This is what we did in the center of a village in Yanqing. It's revitalized a village, an old gardening village. We created this art space in the center. And what we did is actually we put everything underground and tilted the surface of the ground a little bit, so it has a raised corner to have access to the underground space, but more importantly, to have this open space that is not entirely flat, so people can have multiple activities on it, including the looking at the hill pavilion and having multiple activities in this half outdoor, half indoor space beneath ground. And also on top of the ground, you do see people doing all kinds of activities. And for the scale that getting closer to ourselves, including the personal scale, the current technology actually can monitor and can measure all of our body movement and can read from our movement how happy we are. And this is a temporary installation we did in the garden of Suzhou, in the Master of the Net garden. And actually, this was a contemporary architecture exhibition curated by another Italian professor, Luca Molinari, from Milan. It is a waterless toilet. We selected a pretty unknown corner in the garden near the exit of the garden. And we reinterpreted the very old Chinese idea of having a fake mountain in the outside. The fake mountain interacts with the human body with more surface nuances, and actually releasing yourself was the traditional activity, one of the traditional activities that you can have in the fake mountain. So we do the waterless toilet and wrap it around in a series of boxes using this waterless toilet and have it installed near the fake mountain, near the exit of the garden, just to make sure that all these corners, all these openings do have an interaction with the body of an individual from the entering of the toilet to the time you release yourself and to the time you exit. So we do believe, and through these five scales, we can better relate or reconnect to the urban spaces to make the spaces more livable and therefore achieving more sustainability in our new cities. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gianli, for bringing us into another notion of sustainability that is about the touch, the connection between human body and the urban spaces of the city, where technology can play a role of mediating, measuring, and definitely making better this relation, this physical relation between the two issues. Another very important relation between the human body and the human being and the city can be also mediated by the environment, by the nature, by the role that this can play in the urban life. So on this topic, I will leave the floor to Stefano Boeri. Thank you very much, Stefano, to being with us at the Biennale Tecnologia. I think no need to introduce Stefano Boeri to the Italian audience. I will just say that he's professor at the Politecnico di Milano and the president of La Triennale di Milano. The office Stefano Boeri Architetti is based in Milan and Shanghai, so between Italy and China, having also a branch in Tirana. And is currently working on international urban forestry projects in both continents, like in Paris, Lausanne, Eindhoven, but also in Nanjing and other Chinese cities. So before leaving the floor to Stefano Boeri, I just remind to the audience that you can post your question to the chat, and I will read to our guest after the speech by Stefano Boeri. Please, Stefano, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So First of all, thanks so much for inviting me. So I'm simply trying to, let's say, what my renowned colleagues have about the possible comparison between China and Europe in terms of sustainability and public policies on that field. Some consideration related to some of the projects that we are developing in Europe and in China. And that's something which is very important for us because we started some years ago to, let's say, try to go ahead with the same kind of approach in these two different contexts. And we cannot for sure exclude to talk about what happened some months ago and how the result and also the consequences of the pandemic condition was and is so strong in, let's say, stressing and straightening and also enforcing all what is our force to try to deal with not simply pandemic crisis, but its connection with climate crisis and with the risk that for all the change that we do on our territories in terms of reduction, loss of biodiversity are so dangerous in terms of how we expose our species to the risk of new pandemics of, zoonosis processes and spillover processes. I believe we have to start considering what cities nowadays. So if you could imagine to gather what city in one unique part of the planet, we probably not have cover more than 3% of the surface of the planet. But this 3%, as we know, it's changing. It's going up and growing everywhere in the world with different percentage in different parts of the world. And we know well that also what it are going to produce in terms of presence of informal settlement poverty, how it can be conditioned by the how global warming will intervene in multiplicating the number of profugies related to climate change we'll have in the next year. All this connected with all the process of air pollution, I believe it's something that can be extremely clear in talking about what's happening nowadays in Europe and China from that point of view, and also connected with the phenomenon of flooding. We know that cities are producing 75% of the CO2 emissions that are present in our atmosphere, and I believe that what we have to do all over the world is to try to be aware of the role of city in being the origin of climate change, be aware of that cities, and that's some evident also in China, are the first victim thanks to what Shanghai is doing, try to be protected by possible future flooding process in the area, and how we could imagine to really push city to become the protagonist of a large campaign to tackle down, to slow down climate change. So basically, that's what we try to do, being aware of the different phenomena, the difference we have in different countries. And we know that forests and trees and plants are and should become our partners in this campaign. Not simply because they are defending biodiversity, because they are, let's say, capable to produce renewable energies, but because they are absorbing CO2. So we have a lot of instruments and tools now to try to avoid to produce new CO2, but we have only plants and trees if we want to let's say, they already produce the CO2. So that's probably the beginning of our experience on vertical forest. And that's, as you know, it's what we have done. It's a prototype of this kind of new building where living nature is not considered simply an ornamental present, but it's something more. It's a basic component of our building. And the advantages that this kind of building can produce in terms of reducing the dust, which is present in urban pollution, air pollution, and absorbing CO2, reducing the heat that normally happens in the Italian island. And then it's quite relevant and important. And that's something that we are doing also in China. We started in parallel. That's one of the first vertical forests that we are still in construction. That are images some years ago. This is Nanjing, where we are building two towers of vertical forest. One is a office tower, another is a residential building with a mall at the center. That's our images of the building more advanced, and this is a construction site how it is now, with the first floor was planted just 1 week ago. So it's quite emotional for us to see this huge double vertical forest in Nanjing, which is coming to be opened. To be a very, very, let's say, schematic, there is the real advantage of this building, as they are capable to concentrate in a small surface. That's what could happen in an amazing number of trees and plants. So this is equivalent of hectares of real forest in a very, very small urban surface. And these are experiments that we are doing basically all over the world. You see also in China. And we are now working seriously in order to make these prototypes, this idea of vertical forests, affordable for everybody. That's a building that we are talking in Eindhoven. It's in construction. It will be ended in March. And that for us, it's such an important step forward. And the same is we're doing in Hangguang in China, which is economic social housing complex residential that is also in ongoing to be constructed. But the same issue we are doing also in other fields. So the idea of demineralizing cities and introducing green roofs and green surfaces also in the horizontal side of the building. That's the work we have done for the Holy Clinical Hospital in Milano. And the same we are doing for a rehabilitation center in Shenzhen. That's a building that is a result of a competition that we have won. So this also is going to be built. And you see here that idea of a green surfaces that are strictly connected with the indoor space of this rehab center, where the issue about accessibility and affordability is absolutely crucial for all the age, for all the condition of country, for all the people. So this project is for us really strategic and crucial. And also it's important that it's happening in such an important city now in the future of science. For sure, we are also working, another one is about how we can imagine, propose new solution for try to, let's say, accept and absorb and transform in a resource the migration flows that are so important from the countryside to the environments in China. So that's something that we had done some years ago when we started to imagine the idea of the forest city. And it's a possibility to alternate or to, well, to give an alternative to the simple addition of new pericarical residential environment to a huge metropolitan and megalopolis environment. And that's an idea of a system of, urban villages with at the center a park, and with the idea to have for every district condition accessibility to all the services to the city, which is be asked more time than 50-20 minutes. So what's now studying in Europe and in USA about the 50-minute city was in a certain way already a part of this proposal, and that's an example of it in China. And this is another project that we developed for Lijiu, Southeast China, about the idea to have a forest city which is developed along a river with listing. And that's something that we are doing in another part of the world, Mexico, with the idea always to, propose a new model of a new nation city that has to, in this case, to host 130,000 people and a very important number of plants and plants and trees. And that will be able to, host in this environment many research centers. But for sure, all this has no reason to be faced if we don't care about how we could do, what we could do in order to try to slow down this process of migration from the countryside. So that's an issue which is so important also in Europe nowadays, how we can regenerate, repopulate the rural villages. That is, they are punctuating the entire European territory in Germany, UK, France, Italy. But that's a very serious issue in China, and the Chinese government has started to work very seriously on that. And that's a project that we are going to develop with Slow Food. Slow Food is an Italian, company association that now is present also in China. And they are working very seriously with the Chinese government in order to show in a sample of 100 rural villages in China, how it's possible to convince the farmer to stay, not to, you know, to commute, to move to cities, and how they can really have the condition to invest in the future of their son or their nephews in that territory. So we are not entering into the detail of the project and how it's working in terms of improving the condition of transformation of agricultural products into food. But what we have to imagine that for every bunch of villages, have three spaces that are a school, a library, and a museum. And that's a way, I think, I believe it's to show that the projection of the possible investment of the future of the countryside villages in China, in Europe, everywhere, is also related with the necessity to be, let's say, to experience a full life, which just do not simply with the production, eating, with the survival, but also with the cultural sets that we have to guarantee to them. So that's our kind of modular proposal of schools or library that we can imagine to realize in this system of small agricultural countryside villages in China. Just to conclude, I believe we have, it's very important now to consider another issue at a different scale, a totally different scale. But last year at the New York United Nations Summit on Climate Change, together with FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization, and we were partnering with a lot of Chinese students and researchers, we were trying to work on this idea, which was developed by Richard Weller, Penn University, about the World Park. World Park is a possible way to imagine that in the future, natural parks, protected environment, protected areas could be, let's say, connected. And the issue of connection is so important nowadays in different parts of the planet. Probably the most famous example of that is it's this amazing green corridor that African Union started to build south of Sahara Desert 10-11 years ago, which is now evident also from the satellite. But what we were discussing in New York was that this idea of a green corridor connecting natural and green environments, but also, and that's very important, connecting cities. Cities should be obstacles. They have to become the hubs, the green nodes of this possible huge planetary connection, which are the thing. And so if we think what the Italian Chinese government is doing in China in order to stop the extension of the Gobi Desert, we see that this issue is so planetary, is so global, and it's, I believe, one of the possible connection of these two cities. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much to Stefano Boeri. We have some 10 minutes for the discussion, and Stefano, I will start exactly with a question with you, inspired by the title of this Biennale that is called Mutations for a Sustainable Future. So 20 years ago exactly, you were among the protagonists, together with Rem Koolhaas, Hans Sobrist, and others, of a research that was called Mutation again, where one urban area of China, the Pearl River Delta, was among the case studies. So what changed in the Chinese phenomenon of urbanization from that study on the Pearl River Delta to this new applications you are developing today?
I believe that I go back. So there is, first of all, a large awareness shared also by the central government, and that the one model of let's say extension of all the major urban environments of the Chinese urban environment related to the necessity to, let's say, absorb all the migration processes from the countryside, in itself it's capable to produce several dangers, several risks, not simply related with urban pollution, but also with the basic quality of life. So I believe that one of the most relevant changes that in China, the issue of how we can control or imagine, let's say, a dimension of the future city that will not be infinite, will not be simply a total extension, but has to be controlled. It's now something which is at the center of the consideration of the local and national government. And then another issue I want to try to say, it's about countryside. So what is possible to do now to try to reverse this process of migration in some way? And another point is about forest and woodland. So China has lost a lot of forest environments in the last parts of the last century, and now the enormous effort, which is visible also from the satellite, that China is doing in order to forest and reforest large part of its territory, it's an amazing contribution also in terms of reduction of the CO2 in the atmosphere of the planet. So I believe these three are very clear and very strong.
Thank you very much. I would like to ask a similar question about the change of the urban paradigm in China to Zhang Li, from, of course, a different point of view as a Chinese architect, maybe focusing on the topic of the control of the number of residents in city. There is a question from the audience asking whether don't limitate the growth of the city. Spectator is saying cities with millions and millions of inhabitants is not a good perspective for our sustainable future. So I would like to ask Zhang Li your opinion on the topic.
Well, I would say a better balance between the countryside, between the rural and the urban would be the way to go. And actually, as Boeri has put it, both the state government and the provincial governments, they are trying to create this, to achieve this better balance. You do see all kinds of decision making actually trying to shift the resource, the opportunities and the economic benefits towards the countryside, towards the mountainous areas, towards places that are used to be somehow exploited by the cities. And what we do believe, a change of lifestyle will also drive this kind of shift of balance. For example, all these sports and leisure related lifestyles, when you do have them, when you do promote them, when people start to take them, more attention and more opportunities will be given, will be let to the countryside and to the rural, and in the end, balancing the entire structure of the economy and the structure of the urbanization as well.
Thank you very much, Zhang Li, thank you. And a last question from our panel to Bernard Muller, again from the audience. This is a question about participation. You mentioned this topic in your presentation. So the question is about different approaches in participation in China and Europe. And I can add, after 3 years of research in the Horizon 2020 project, you were a very deep observer of both the situation in China and European cities. Please, final comments by you.
Thank you very much as well for the question. I think indeed there are many differences between the understanding in China and in European countries, and Europe is not homogeneous. We have to see that as well. So participation, which means we have to think in different levels. So do we talk about information? I think China is extremely good in information, giving information through these urban planning demonstration halls in a way. So that's perfect. But when we go to, let's say, joint discussion, and then finally as well to joint decision making, then I think it becomes much weaker if we look at and compare with European countries. So actually, there are very different approaches. They are working differently as well. The expectations of the population are different. So here you are getting, if a municipality is not putting up participatory rules and regulations and opportunities, they get an opposition immediately. Where we are maybe a little bit more distant to this in China. But let me say one thing as we're talking about sustainability. I think that's very important as well, looking at the different presentations which we have here. It's not only the participation, but when we talk about sustainability, we're talking about an integrated concept. And I think that's always important to think about. Because it includes the social issues, it includes economic issues, it includes environmental issues. I have worked a long time in environmental improvements of cities and neighborhoods and so on, and I admire very much what was presented here as well. But we have to take into consideration that if, for instance, before starting new projects by mainly big developers, if we relocate people, then we may get further or closer to environmental sustainability. But I'm not sure that this is really in the, let's say, perspective, and that we are enhancing social issues as well and social sustainability. So we have to always think this concept in an integrated way, and to bring this into participation as well is, I think, an utmost a topic and import of utmost importance for the future.
Thank you very much, Bernard. We are going to close our panel. I would like to thank especially our three guests. Thank you very much to Bernard Muller, Zhang Li, and Stefano Boeri to take part to this panel. And a suggestion for our audience interested in Chinese urbanization, if you switch at 3 o'clock to the streaming channel Prometeo, another event that is called Materiali Urbani e Progetti di Città, we'll see Augusto Cagnardi, an Italian architect designing with Vittorio Gregotti the new town of Pujang, talking together with Francesco Carota, one of the curators of the China Goes Urban exhibition at the Museum of Oriental Art in Torino. So they will be there in the rooms of the museum, even if closed, to make a discussion about Chinese urbanization. Thank you very much to all of you, and see you to the next Biennale Tecnologia. Bye-bye. Thank you.